This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Ante Up by M.O.P., a 90s rap song, the greatest anthem ever written about aggravated robbery, an endorsement of aggravated robbery, which I once suggested as for an unofficial Tony Allen theme song back in the day, because no one, he was an absolute thief on the court.
I want to get to your piece on Tony Allen. I've told people that they should make time for the Daily Memphian today, because you've got a tremendous piece on Tony Allen. It's part of a two-part series on how he wound up in Memphis and sort of the birth of the grit grind era. So you can read that over there. Drew has a couple pieces, one on P.J. Haggerty, and then one funny one that just went up on, he was at the Landers Center last night, and Yuki, of course, playing for the Hustle. And there's literally a couple from Japan honeymooning in South Haven because of...
Oh, boy. God bless them.
God bless them for that, man. So that's hilarious. Chris also has a piece up on Ja that went up yesterday and Ja's week that was, and so that is worth noting as well. So you can read all that the Daily Memphian. Tonight, the Grizzlies have the Jazz. Where do you want Cooper Flagg? Of the three teams tied now for 14% chance to get Cooper Flagg, Washington, Utah, and Charlotte, where do you want him to end up?
Washington really needs a reset. Like, they haven't had anything. They had that one team for a couple of years with John Wall and Bradley Beal, that was kind of interesting. Other than, like, the Chris Webber thing, like, was aborted before it got going. And, like, right. They haven't been good, really good since the 70s. Even when they won a title or whatever in the late 70s, I don't know if they were that interesting. It's like the least memorable.
Wes Unseld, Alvin Hayes.
Yeah. It's like team. One of the least memorable title teams ever, right?
Right.
And like our nation's capital, like, could probably use a boost. And so.
probably right.
That's a franchise. You know, they changed their name or whatever and changed cities. And they've changed over the years, but it's a long time franchise, more so than the Charlotte Hornets, that has not had a lot of success. And I think Cooper Flagg going to Washington would be good.
Want him east. So you just don't want him in Utah or in New Orleans, right? Those are because after that, the other ones with substantial odds are Brooklyn, Toronto. That's all. Those are fine. Even Philly, as woeful as that. Does that chip go to OKC? That pick goes to OKC.
There's some protection. There's some trade thing on that. I don't know.
Up.
Washington. Let the worst team get the top pick this year. That's what I'm rooting for.
All right. Tonight you got Brandon Clark out. Zach.
No, Brandon Clark is questionable and Zach Edey is questionable.
And we'd like to see Zach Edey against Walker Kessler again.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good matchup.
Well, you would like to have the Grizzlies. They had all four of their main front court rotation out the last game, and they won, and they got good contributions from Jay Huff and Marvin Bagley. But you'd like to get at least one of those dudes back with Jaren and Santi out.
Jaren and Santi out. Brandon Clark and Zach Edey are questionable.
We do have Vince Williams and Luke Kennard back after missing the last game, so there are some reinforcements.
Jazz have lost six straight, and they are definitely in the thick of it in the tank. Kyle Filipowski plays for the Jazz, but yeah, okay. Anyway, that's tonight. One thing I did want to ask you about in the Ja piece, couple things. I missed his reference that you then asked him about, and he referred back to what he said on TV about getting some medical help.
This was the walk-off interview on ESPN with Cassidy Hubbard. So the national television broadcast.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I didn't know it. When I went to the locker room, because I'm at the arena, I wasn't watching on TV, so I didn't ask about it that night, and neither did Tim McMahon, who's the ESPN guy who was there, because neither one of us saw what had happened in this post-game interview. And so I didn't know about it. I didn't find out about it until later. Then I asked him about it the next game at New Orleans. And I don't care, but he said it on the broadcast, so that made it a public thing. He said some jokey thing about, yeah, I got some help. I probably shouldn't say that, you know, on TV, or shouldn't say that to the media, and then left it at that. And so I said, hey, is there any more you can say about this? And he just said, you can just take my quote off TV. I think this is what I said. And he reiterated.
Jeffrey, you're always about people getting shots. Is that what that means to you? I got some help. What does that mean to you?
I think it means I saw a specialist.
I saw a specialist.
Yeah.
Okay.
The only thing I assume.
Of course, we're all wild speculating here. Yeah.
The only thing I assume is something medical related in some capacity, rather than like, you know, I meditated on it or whatever.
Right. You know. You also, again, you can read the piece over the Daily Memphian just to sort of about Jaws last week and the progress that seems to have been made. You had said anecdotally that you thought that he was more floaters, more mid-range game, whatever. And in fact, then you looked at the numbers, which seemed to suggest limited sample size.
Yeah, limited sample. But if you look at like the NBA zone tracking data, where they look at, you can carve this different ways. If I look at the one where it's basically just restricted area, which is like right at the rim, or in the paint, but outside the restricted area, which is sort of that floater range, and then mid-range, and then three-pointers. If you look at his percentage of those four categories of shot types over the season and compare it to this three-game sample over the weekend, he basically shaved some of the rim and some of the three and moved more stuff into the middle to the floater in the mid-range, and that's certainly what it looked like. And now he hit the mid-range stuff at a like 70% level, and that's not normal, probably not sustainable. But I think that was good, because I was saying before he did it that's what I thought was needed. I just think it makes him more of a dual threat as both a scorer and a passer, frankly, when you're in that sort of range. I think that's more of a playmaking range than at the rim or from the three-point line. And it's also less wear and tear on him, and I think he's good at getting into those open spots and making those shots. And so I think in some broad, generalized thing, you could say, well, you want the threes and the layups. You don't want the mid-range and the floaters. But we're not talking general. We're talking about John Morant, you know?
He did, however, when you asked him about the three-pointers, and I don't know how you phrased it exactly. I'd be interested. This is sort of a delicate question to ask.
What I said was basically, I said, you know, you took five threes tonight but I basically pointed out the number of threes he took relative to the number of total shots he took, which was 29. I said, that's a lower percentage of threes than you've been taking lately. Was that strategy on your part, or is that just the way the game flowed?
And he said, I would have shot 10 of those bitches.
Right. Or 100.
Or 100.
If they can't back it off, yeah.
It's interesting. Because I think you, and then he said something about, you just see the last one. I do think some of that's, I don't think you're going to get a straight answer there. Because
no, of course
he's going to say.
It was a colorful quote, so.
Yeah, but he has to say, I'm going to shoot him when
that's
they're
right.
open, right?
That's
doesn't
right.
it, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean he actually isn't conscious of the fact that he.
100%. 100%.
Right?
Yeah, that is why, like, you know, I tend to focus more on what is done than what is said. Because I think that's very much true, and you try to take it to the context. When people say stuff, you try to take it to the context of, like, the situation they're in and how they have to navigate it and all of that.
Yeah. It's a great quote. I would have shot 10 of those bitches. Now, in the CA, it says, I would have shot, I mean, the Daily Memphian, whoops, it would have said, I would have shot 10 of those B dash dash dash.
Yeah,
dash,
I don't dash, know. Dash, I don't know. Dashes. Man.
So
that part was out of my hands. That's not the way I type it, but yeah.
All right. Your TA piece is up, and I would urge people to take a little time to read
the first
it because it's fabulous. One of two. The other one's dropping tomorrow.
This one's probably better, but you should read both.
Is that true? This one's better? Well, my expectation. By the way, I finally watched Conclave. How did I not know about the twist at the end? I've read a lot about Conclave sort of over the
years.
Maybe
you're doing a good job of staying off social media these
days. And I have obviously done a good job. You liked Conclave?
I did. I didn't love Conclave, but like I saw like 80 movies, a very selective 80 movies. I've only seen stuff mostly that had a chance to be good. It was like, you know, my 25th favorite movie or whatever.
Right.
Which is still a movie I liked, but yeah.
Okay. Anyway, pieces, I was talking about, thinking about expectations there. So I want to go through, and I'm not going to spoil the whole thing because it's a great piece that people should read. But it's partly about Tony coming here and how slow the rollout was.
Right.
And first of all, you obviously had a great conversation with Lionel Hollins because
totally.
He is totally upfront.
Even better when the recorder was off, man.
Totally upfront.
Shout out to Coach Train, as Zach Randolph says.
About how much he did not want Tony Allen. I read the quote earlier, basically, where he said, I thought we could bring back Ronnie Brewer, who they traded a first for during that season, and go get a point guard we'd pretty solid. I didn't like the fact they were looking at Allen as a backup point guard. Chris made the decision, and he wanted to go with someone he knew.
Which Lionel was right about that part, and that's a funny thing. When I went back, and looked at like not only stuff I had written in the run-up to that season, but some other stuff. Like I have like the Hollinger Pro Basketball Forecast or Prospectus, whatever book from that summer. And I actually still had in a file somewhere like the ESPN like team preview and some of that kind of stuff, right? People were talking about Tony Allen as being the backup point guard.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy now.
And in fact, even their starting
said that
point
to Tony.
Guard is crazy.
I even said that to Tony. He laughed about it. I was like, people only saw you with the Grizzlies, but I thought that was weird. And he said, well, you know, I didn't get my dribble didn't get ripped very much. And he actually talked to me about playing backup point guard with Boston for large stretches. None of that's in the story, but no, that was part of the idea is that he would play a lot of backup point guard, and Lionel was very suspicious
of
that.
They didn't have a starting point guard, because O.J. wasn't a very good point guard either, really. O.J. was their starting point guard.
Well, no, Mike Conley was.
Mike was already on that team. That's right.
Yeah, so Mike was the first guy.
They used O.J. as... Who else did they?
Jason Williams was on that team at one point. That was in the era where they were just like bringing guys in. Like Gilbert Arenas came in at one point, and actually Gilbert Arenas may have been on that. No, that was the next year. You know, Jamal Tinsley showed up at one point. They were just searching all the time.
So anyway, so he brings in Tony Allen, and then you have this great quote that you excavated, I guess, from one of your former publications, where Lionel comes out and says Tony's going to be a utility player. If Xavier is able to handle the load, he'll back up OJ. If not, we'll look to Sam. Tony will be the wild card we'll play in certain situations where we need energy.
Yeah. No, and when I talked to Mike, and I don't think this quote's in the story either, but I talked to Mike about like the start of that season, Mike basically said the same thing. He said, yeah, Tony was going to be like the X-Factor guy, the energy guy. Like, it was not – even though he had had the success in Boston, it was not widely expected that he was going to play this enormous role with the team. I mean, they drafted Xavier Henry in the lottery that summer.
And so he comes in, and I was astounded by this, too. Prior to what you're identifying as identified in this piece as the first really TA game, he had as many DNPs as starts.
Yes. I believe, if I remember correctly, you have it in front of you, I don't have it in front of me. I think that was his fourth start as a Grizzly, the game I'm talking about, which is not the Grit Grind game. It's a month before that. It was his fourth start on the team, and he'd had four DNPs. Lots of other games where he's playing like 5 minutes.
One more time. Which game? I've got it in front of me.
It's January. It's home against OKC in January of 2011. So, I don't remember the date.
So
January 4th.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he'd gotten some starts. I mean, he'd played some. He played against the Clippers. He was he was thrust into the lineup against the Clippers.
He had been out of the mix pretty much completely, and then he had this game at the Clippers where he was not in the rotation. And then like they're down in the fourth quarter, and Lionel just grabs him off the bench and throws him out there, and he has like four steals in the fourth quarter, and then win the game. He plays the whole fourth quarter, and Lionel gives him the game ball and says, you know, we want to give kudos to Tony Allen for staying ready and whatever. But even then, he hadn't totally broken in.
All right, so the game that you're identifying is this earlier game against Oklahoma City, and it came in the wake of the card game fight on the plane between
OJ and Mayo. It was the first game after that,
so
the next day.
How did they all – I take it you went and you plowed this ground again with these with – like, how did they talk about this?
Reluctantly for the players, and Lionel like didn't really care.
That was hilarious.
I could have done another 800 words of Lionel talking about all this stuff. But some of Lionel's memories conflict with some of the other stuff, and so I just decided that nuts and bolts of what happened on the plane is not actually that important. And so
what's the essence without
corroborating, I just let some of that go. The essence is there was some argument over a card game on the flight back. And Tony Allen punched OJ in the face, and then they got separated. Now, whether some versions of that is OJ owed money and wouldn't pay, and some versions of that is OJ was up and said, okay, I'm up, let's quit, and there's 2 hours left on the flight, and that was not okay with anybody. There's different versions of it. To me, what's meaningful about it is not what happened on the plane. What's meaningful about it is that it did not disrupt the team's season or Tony Allen's elevation. And, in fact, he had his best game as a Grizzly to that point literally the very next game. Not only was he not suspended, he was in the starting lineup and became a cult hero that night. That's what's meaningful about it. What's funny about it, the fight is not funny.
Okay, but Lionel emerges as a hero in a way, the way he handled it,
yeah.
And to your point. But here's among the things that's funny about it. Here's Lionel. I've been in a few fights, and I've seen a few fights, where both people are in it, but only one gets to fight. And that's what happened,
right.
Sid Hollins.
Right.
OJ was in the fight, but he wasn't able to fight.
That's right.
That's what's funny about it. Now, the meaningful thing, and Mike Conley, you had a conversation with Mike Conley, I guess, about this.
Yeah.
Has said how Lionel handled it was critical.
Yeah, what Conley said in a way that more so than anyone else said is that When they're going into that game, everyone's looking around like, okay, how's this going to go? Are we going to be okay?
The next game
after the next game. Because the next day, really, there's one.
How was OJ, by the way?
OJ was not with the team in that game.
What was wrong with him?
On the box score, I sort of don't want to give too much away, but this is stuff people know. On the box score, it says NWT, not with team, bronchitis is what it says on the box score to this day. You can look it up. Not with team bronchitis. It was a one-game bronchitis absence for OJ Mayo. Great moments in media relations. That's why that's funny. That's not funny because of OJ Mayo or Tony Allen, or that's just like
bronchitis.
And so Tony started, and like that game, a lot of people I think have not remembered that game. I've always remembered that game, and I actually still had, I lost a lot of the stuff I wrote back then has disappeared from the internet. But at one point a few years ago, I started to cut and paste stuff and put it into Google Docs to keep it. And then I got sidetracked, and then the rest of it disappeared, so I didn't get the rest of it, but I got that game. So I have my full game report from that game, which I called the Tony Allen game the next day. Like, I called that the Tony Allen game. And in fact, when I did my moments of the season, which I only did 10 that year, it's ballooned in subsequent years, I still have that too, my top 10 moments of the season. One of those moments is the first Tony Allen game. One of those moments is the second Tony Allen game, which I'm writing about tomorrow.
And by the way, people can, people will enjoy the piece every bit as much, and there's more depth in it, and so you should read it as well. You're not giving too much away. But Mike, you said the way Mike talked about this was, and it, some like Lionel being who he was,
right,
and the kind of coach and player he had been mattered in this moment, didn't you?
Yeah, Lionel didn't make it too much, you know. Lionel was like been there, done that a little bit with the fights. There's a quote, I think this quote's in the story, I can't remember. There's a quote from Zach about like Lionel played with Maurice Lucas, like Lionel's seen fights, you know. He's been in fights, he's seen fights, he knows this happens among teammates, and you just brush it off and you move forward, right? And so Lionel, everyone gives Lionel credit for handling that well. Lionel didn't remember anyone getting fined. Tony says he got fined, so I'd trust Tony on that. Because Lionel wasn't paying the money, so he why would he remember, right?
Right.
But Lionel says that, and again, Michael Heisley's not around for me to ask him, but Lionel says that like Heisley wanted to suspend Tony. Not Bo, but suspend Tony. And that's partly where the quote about in the fight, able to fight came from, because Lionel remembers that Heisley comes to him and says, like Double D, who was just Dana Davis, who was sort of managing the stuff for the team. Dana said that Tony was the only one who fought, and that was his basically explanation to Lionel. It's like, well, they both fought. You can't just suspend Tony. And Lionel was adamant about not suspending Tony, and he thought that would have messed up the team.
So what then happened in that game?
Tony Allen missed four layups, one a breakaway off a steal that was completely uncontested at the rim. The crowd booed and not booed. They did not boo. Let me back up. No booing. The crowd groaned and winced. You could feel the groaning and the wincing when Tony would touch the ball. And then he started getting to a rhythm, and then he started doing great stuff, and he's blocking Westbrook at the rim, and he hit a clutch three, and he did a Antoine Walker shimmy going backwards, and now the crowd is laughing and the crowd is cheering, and that was the first time that the home crowd in Memphis really went on the ride with Tony Allen. The no,
right.
Yes.
Right.
That's the first time they really experienced that.
Did he start there from there on going forward?
No, he did not become a full-time starter until later in the season, much later in the season. Lytle decided at one point that he was going to make O.J. the sixth man. And when he made O.J. the sixth man initially, he made Zavi Henry the starter. And that didn't last very long because he had knee issues. So now, like, Henry's unavailable. They don't really want to move O.J. back in the starting lineup. So they had Tony and they had Sam Young. And those guys kind of toggled for a little bit until Tony finally had the spot late in the season. If you go back and look, Sam Young started more games that season than Tony Allen or O.J. Mayo or Xavier Henry.
This was the year that ended up with San Antonio. Is that right? With this,
yeah,
this,
they won.
And so Rudy gets hurt and they trade.
Yeah, Rudy got hurt. So at one point, they were starting. Once Rudy got hurt, at some point, they're starting Sam Young and Tony Allen.
Right.
You know.
And I do remember, like, I remember Vernon pounding the table for Tony Allen way back then. Even this sort of before the...
That was the origin of the phrase...
Before the T-shirts.
The origin of a Chris Vernon coinage, which is in the Grizzlies glossary, is number nine when you need him.
Right. Chris gets justifiable S for the way he hounded Mike Conley. Bounce, 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 bounce.
Right.
You were all right about some things and wrong about others, but he was right. Yep. How does Lytle talk about it now? In terms of, is he rueful about the way he took? Yeah, I didn't want him. Like, is he? And then obviously he. I mean, they had a.
Here's another thing about Tony early that season. He was not playing regularly. He also, on the whole, wasn't playing well. If you go back and look at it, you look at the turnovers relative to the steals. You look at the shooting numbers. You look at the plus minus. Like. The team, he was not, it's not like he was playing great and then they wouldn't play him more. That was not the case.
He was not playing great.
And Lytle has a quote, I can't remember whether it's in the story or not, but it's sort of something, and it's not a thing you associate with Lytle Hollins, probably unfairly, but it's something like I'll bring up sometimes, just sort of about the NBA season. He basically says, you know, I always said that the first, you know, I remember he says third or whatever, the first portion of the season is about experimentation and exploration. You're trying to figure out what your style of play is and what you're doing. And so for Lytle, I think it was natural to, like, you don't have the whole thing figured out on day one. And, like, the team sort of grows into what it's going to be, you know?
Well, it's a tremendous piece, and people can read it over at the Daily Memphian. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're going to take a break. Come back. Talk to Sam Hardiman on the other side. It's Jeff Gawkinshire, 92.9 FM ESPN.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman writes for the Daily Memphian. He's also a fan of the Boston Bruins, who traded Brad Marchand. Which probably doesn't mean a lot to you, but I take it devastated you, Sam?
I'm upset.
You sound upset, but you sounding upset sounds much like you do when you're elated, honestly. Not a huge difference in tone.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
I kind of have a monotone. My face isn't great at doing expressions. Yeah, I'm flawed in many ways.
I didn't say it was a flaw. It's just an observation. But when you trade a franchise legend, it's too bad not to get more than a conditional second-round pick back, I think, right? Isn't that part of the problem here?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, right? Like, if it had been some haul, I would be, like, talking myself into it. I would feel better about it. But instead, it's a conditional. It turns into a second-round pick if the Panthers win two first-round pick, if they win two playoff series, and he plays 50% of the games, it's like...
They probably will.
It's not really a good trade.
They probably will, though. They probably will. And your Pats have since loaded up. Like, your Pats have gone out there and gotten what you wanted them to do. They've spent money, and they've fortified themselves. You pleased?
I mean, none of the guys that they went and got, with the exception of Milton Williams, who still didn't play like much more than 50% of the Eagles snaps last year, are like difference makers, right? They're right. Just NFL caliber players, right? So you're going from just being a doormat to being like a fancier doormat, right?
Yeah,
let's see what they do with the draft.
NFL teams have, all NFL teams, even the best, have a bunch of just NFL caliber players. Hell, you can argue that the Bills have Josh Allen and then a bunch of NFL caliber players, right? Like they're a little scarier. I look around the East now, the AFC East, and the Jets seem like they're tanking and the Pats seem like they're fortifying. I think I'll be a little more worried about those games. So,
But you have Joey Bosa, like, who's like going to be like what Von Miller should have been, right? Like, Von Miller was just kind of washed, and now Joey Bosa is like not washed. And so for 1 year, that's a much better pass rush.
To be fair, Von Miller, before he hurt himself with the Bills, had, it may have been already 10 sacks that year. Like, he was killing it, and then he blew out his knee, and then that was that. Joey Bosa, 1 year, $12 million. Yeah, I'm in favor of Joey Bosa, if not his view of the world. We do have more news, constant news, including, it feels like we talk about XAI nearly every week here on this show. They're building a new data center in Whitehaven. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so we broke a story, my colleague Sophia Surrett and I, last week at the Daily Memphian, that XAI has purchased a 1 million square foot building on Tulane Road down in Whitehaven. This is about a half mile south, so to speak, from the links at Whitehaven Golf Course. It's essentially a stone's throw from the South Haven TVA combined cycle plant, which is the other natural gas plant that's in the area, not the Allen plant, but this is the South Haven plant. And the plan is, and we reported this back in December, that XAI planned to grow its Memphis presence to a million chips. Right now, down at its existing facility in Southwest Memphis at Pigeon Industrial Park, it's got about 225,000 NVIDIA chips. This facility, the new one that they just purchased, could house, you know, more than 300,000 chips. And so this is, like they said, a planned expansion for XAI, and it comes, you know, with further concerns, I'm sure.
I'm going to get to the concerns in a moment. Let's talk about the upside real quick. What does this mean in terms of jobs, tax revenue, any of that stuff? What can you tell me about the positive impact that this might have?
Yeah, so Brent Mayo, who's one of the XAI's top executives here in Memphis, told the Daily Memphian, told me that essentially this is going to add, you know, 200-250 jobs in the long term, this new data center, which is not a tremendous amount of jobs, but it's more jobs. And in the short term, 1,500 to 2,000 people will be working on the site. You know, these are contractors for construction, right, in this massive time frame. In terms of tax revenue, it is quite likely that we haven't confirmed that they're not going to receive a tax break for this facility. So just like the facility over in Southwest Memphis, XAI will be paying full freight on what is a massive amount of personal property, okay? And that means that these chips, which are incredibly valuable, I mean, they've moved markets tremendously in the past couple of years, will be taxed, and that revenue will be going to Shelby County and the city of Memphis.
Okay, and then the concerns, it feels like with the other XAI plan, it literally concerns on two fronts, fundamentally. One is power, and one is water. And then the power is sort of pollution concerns that come with that as well. What are the evident concerns about power supply and about the aquifer as they pertain to this new facility, and how much has XAI said things to reassure the community on those two fronts?
Yeah, I mean, first, you know, what I would say is we don't really know a ton yet on water. We're working on that, and I'm sure we'll hear more soon, maybe report more soon on that front in terms of how this will be cooled. This facility, these data centers, they run very hot, and they need to be cooled either through air or through water. This is obviously not anywhere close to the water recycling facility that XAI is going to build in Southwest Memphis, so they're not going to probably, it would be very untenable financially even for them probably to put a water pipeline you know, from that recycled water facility to cool this plant in Whitehaven, because, you know, there's quite a distance between the two. Memphis is a huge city.
Right.
On the power front, it is, well, like I said, and I pointed out, it's very close to the South Haven combined cycle plant. And if you drive by the site, and I have, you will see that there is essentially space being cleared as well by XAI and their contractors for what would be transmission lines from that plant to the property. They also bought 100 adjoining acres, okay? And they would then build substations that would step down that power, the power that's coming out of that plant, and then power the facility. What Brent Mayo said to the Daily Memphian last week is he's not sure if the company is going to use gas turbines like they do in Southwest Memphis, which are the environmental concerns associated with that project. But the company will use Tesla Megapacks, which are battery storage, and when the grid is stressed, right? Because there is likely, probably, power available from TVA when the grid is not stressed. Like a beautiful day like today, for example, the TVA system has plenty of capacity. On a very hot day, maybe in 2 months, when it's 98 degrees and all of us have our ACs up, there's probably not power available. And so that's when XAI would come off the grid, Mayo said, and essentially use these megapacks, these battery storage, to power operations until there is more capacity on the grid.
All right, you can read that piece over at the Daily Memphian. And then the other thing that you've written about of particular interest in the last week is this stuff coming out at MATA, including a employee who has been put on leave for, and Jeffrey and I talked about this earlier in the week, sort of some astonishing credit card purchases. $5,000 in PayPal and Venmo money transfers, $10,000 in Amazon purchases, $7,000 at Best Buy, more than $1,000 at Mont Blanc, a maker of fine pens, and money on massages. How is this all emerging, and what the hell?
Yeah, so last Friday, John Lewis, who's the interim CEO of MATA, he's a City of Memphis consultant that's since been hired by MATA as the interim CEO, as, you know, Memphis Mayor Paul Young has worked to reshape the Memphis Area Transit Authority, said during a public meeting that a employee had been placed on leave for what he called more than $100,000 in non-business transactions on an Amex company card. I then reached out to MATA after we reported this news, and they confirmed that former interim CEO Lakara Malden is on leave. They would not confirm, and I want to repeat, they would not confirm that she was the card holder.
I see.
Okay? And so I want to be very clear that 1 + 1 may equal 2 here, but we don't know. Okay? And I want to make that clear again, as I said it for the fifth time. And so what's happening here is essentially for months and months, the City of Memphis has expressed skepticism about MATA's record keeping, about its finances. And now that consultants that aren't established, you know, MATA employees are inside the organization, we have this come out, and it's certainly damning. It's certainly troubling. And it is, I mean, it's not going to help in terms of public trust of government, in terms of public trust of the Memphis Area Transit Authority. And it appears from the transactions, you know, we don't know the entirety of these transactions yet. I want to be clear. It appears that none of this stuff was built and intended for helping people get from point A to point B. And that, in the people who rely on that are those who have the least, for the most part. And that is quite sad.
All right. Well, let's end on a happy note. I gather that you saw some heroic first responders this week.
Yeah. So I don't want to give specifics of the incident because for privacy concerns. But this week I was at a public place and there was a medical emergency. And I have to commend the people from the Memphis Fire Department who responded to that medical emergency because they were quick. They were professional. The ambulance got to where I was in about 5 minutes, which is really, really good. You know, obviously faster is always better. Could have been faster, but it was really good. And these firefighters were really professional and they did their job, and it's a really hard job. And, you know, as we talk about people mistrusting government, and we have this era of mistrust in government, you know, the most important government here is local. And there are a lot of people that work really hard for taxpayers. And every time there's a negative story like the one we just talked about, trust in them is tarnished when there are people that show up when you call. And I just want to shout out those people because it's a really hard job and I could not imagine doing it every day.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. You guys read his stuff over at the Daily Memphian. It feels like, in terms of that Mattis story, and by the way, that's true. Like, most people work hard. Most people want to do a good job. And most people show up. And then there are certain people in certain line of work. And first responders are high on that list, who do heroic stuff that every day that that most of us can never imagine doing on our best day. And so I'm glad Sam had that to say. It feels like what happened at the Mata thing is that this new management came in and they decided to throw the old management under the bus. This is where you hit the little thing, the little under the bus. Get it? That was a bus transportation.
You wanted the rim shot?
I need a damn rim shot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, if you're selling your house, Josh Issa would be the person to call 901-461-8147. We had someone, literally a caller who was just calling in to talk about the Grizzlies. Said, by the way, what's Josh Issa's number? 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. It's Josh and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Listen, you get besieged, I'm sure, if you own a house. You get besieged by all these offers cash offers. And Josh will tell you, as he's told me, that most of those cash offers are lowball offers. And it's preposterous. They want to take you for a ride. Well, Josh will not take you for a ride. He does, actually, one of the things that he does, he will offer you cash for your home, but he wants to make sure you get full value for your home. And by the way, you don't have to, you can move on your own timeline. You don't have to move right away. You get up to 4 months to get everything packed, figure out what's next, get the same convenience, only more money. It's Josh Issa and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Again, the phone number 901-461-8147, or you can go to the website, joshhasthebuyers.com. Got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Thanks to everyone who joined me, John, Chris, and Sam. We got SEC tournament action today. We got the Grizzlies playing at FedEx Forum today. A couple things we haven't mentioned, Jeffrey. Tiger. We haven't mentioned Tiger.
Yeah, I think he had kind of been hinting at this on some of the interviews that I've been seeing him do recently. He was putting more and more doubt about being physically able to play. Like, do I think he knew immediately he had an Achilles? I don't know, but
man, he put that body through a lot.
How many? I was trying to like remember. I think before the first comeback, I think he had 17 major surgeries, and I think there's probably been like at least five since then.
Rich Rod at West Virginia has banned TikTok dancing.
All right, maybe this is me getting old.
Yeah.
I love this.
You love it.
Because his quote I thought was great.
Brad did the same thing here. We're going to put a stop to our TikTok dancing.
Right, of course. In the locker room.
Yeah, you know, in the locker room.
We're trying to build
mental
toughness.
What was the quote? I didn't see the quote.
I can't stop them from being on TikTok. So at least he acknowledged that. But he's like, I am trying to build toughness. I want to see. I'm banning the dances.
Do you think dancing is incompatible with toughness?
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say there's not a ton of Jalen Carter TikTok dance videos out there. That is a pure guess.
And then the other news that I was going to comment on briefly was Steph Curry is the new assistant general manager at Davidson. So he's doing two gigs. If Elon can do two gigs, so can Steph,
exactly.
Right? No reason. This is what we're doing now. And but what interested me.
What's happened to the Warriors stock price?
What interested to me is that the budget, NIL budget for Davidson in hoops that they're aiming for. Now, this is men and women.
Yep.
$10 million at Davidson. At Davidson, $10 million.
And again, it is an aim. But I think honestly
that's the kind of scratch you need to be competitive. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, as mentioned, Coach Hurd will join the guys on Jason and John at 1:25. Kevin Cerrito's with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurt going to join us during hour number two. Wednesday means David Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock. Grizzlies pregame at 6:30. Tip-off with Eric at 7.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for an hour. Work is done.